Jesus makes an amazing promise to his followers. Jesus, the Word made flesh, living incarnate, the God of love before them, has walked with them day in, day out. They have come to love Jesus, love the God that they've received and have loved back. But they've been confused, deeply confused many, many times. And they still are. We realized this last Sunday when they were still asking, well, when is the kingdom of David going to return? So Jesus says, I'm sending someone to you. I'm promising someone to you who is going to come and be like an advocate, but more than that, actually. And so he says to them, go back to Jerusalem. And so they do. They gather in what we commonly call the upper room. It's an unlikely diverse group of people if you stop to think about it. It isn't just the 12, you see, or now the 11. It's a larger group of people who have followed and connected with and really listened and heard the voice of Jesus. A very unlikely group, a group of fishermen, as we know, tax collectors, tanners, people who were tainted by handling dead animals and skinning them, but God or Jesus had spent a meal with one of those, a recovering Pharisee or two, and some bold women huddled together in a single room. I think they, at first, like most of us do when we've lost someone and we're gathered with people who knew them, we reminisce, and I believe they reminisced. They shared meals together, they traded stories, there were times when they laughed, times when they cried, and I think maybe had a little spat or two, maybe. Someone didn't remember it quite like someone else did, and they wanted to sort it out. And then someone remembers, they are supposed to pray. They were supposed to pray for the advocate. Now, I can imagine, without too much of a stretch of imagination, that when that's recalled, Peter jumps forward and starts to pray. But he isn't soon alone. They all understand they are all to pray. They didn't have a practice like we do. They all felt free to voice their prayer, and so they do. They start speaking prayer, lifting prayer to God, asking that God, Jesus' promise would be fulfilled. They all prayed out loud at the same time, I do believe. And then at some point, I imagine them falling silent, tired, emotionally drained, each sitting, minding their own thoughts. And then a sound like the wind of a hurricane, and then a vision, and sparks of yellow and orange, and maybe a flick or two of blue, and then a gift of boldness, a gift of speech, and with that speech, portents of the heavens above and signs on the earth below. And open flew the doors, out streamed these anointed people, into the streets they pushed, and out of their mouths came the story. The story of the one God in flesh who died and rose and lives to rescue. The great, mysterious, and invisible, yet the Holy Spirit had come. The very Spirit of God. The Spirit who brooded over the primal deep, who pulsed when the Holy Spirit thought, said, let there be light. The Spirit who breathed into the nostrils and awakened the first one of us, a potent presence. And yet, the writer of the Gospel of John tells us that this awesome energy of God is our personal mentor. He says the Holy Spirit instructs and guides us. The one whose urging we sense now and again. The voice that warns us off of this and prompts us into that. The one who whispers into our brain that we really were wrong a moment ago. And who warns us with satisfaction when we have fulfilled an act of obedience. The writer of John also tells us that the Holy Spirit is not only our mentor, but is an active advocate for us. An advocate is someone who lobbies and speaks on someone else's behalf, who persists and pushes forward that person's cause. An advocate. And what an advocate the Holy Spirit is. The Apostle Paul in Romans 8 explains this in detail. Paul says that the Spirit helps us in our weakness. If we do not know how to pray as we ought, the Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words. Who for us? Oh, that we could comprehend this marvelous, powerful, unstoppable, unquenchable power. That we could understand that we don't have to know how to put two words together in order to pray. That we could understand that we don't have to have accomplished skills to rise up and do. That we could comprehend that our own God, in the nature of the Holy Spirit, translates our prayers, our unuttered, unformed thoughts into prayer. And such a gift this is. It leaves no one out. When we are confounded with an imponderable problem and at a loss as to even what to think about it, let alone pray about it, the Holy Spirit holds this perplexity and in time untangles it, smooths it out, and shows us the peaceful avenues through it. When we are weighed down with an inexpressible grief or fear and unable to speak of it or to see any hope in praying about it, the Holy Spirit moves in next to us and participates in our tears, catches them and presents them to God, and in time merges them with slivers of hope and glimmers of grace. It is the Holy Spirit who takes us beyond our ineptness and helps us perform great acts of grace. When we meet a wrong and long to make it right and don't have a clue what the first step should be, and many of us feel that way right now, the Holy Spirit ponders with us and in time prompts in an idea which, if pursued, leads to another and another, and even works from the other side of the equation for us, so that when we show up trembling, we are met with an open door, a mutually satisfying resolution. When we feel the pull of a call to some fundamental change we suspect will upend our life as we know it, the Holy Spirit, whose call it is, persists, but also breathes reassurance, nudges us to sources of encouragement, and unveils resources and holds us steady when we feel we're about to trip into the abyss. I know that to be true. All we have to do, my friends, is show up. All we have to do is initiate a desire in conversation, a willingness for obedience. All we have to do is imagine what it is we long for. All we have to do is bear open what is it that breaks our hearts. All we have to do is envision the wholeness we desire for ourselves and others. God, the Holy Spirit, will take our longing, shape it and translate it and transform it into music and incense and infuse the God's own heart with it. It is the Holy Spirit who, if we allow her, will move to envision, long for, and desire that which is truly right and good and pleasing to God. So even if we begin our prayers from the wrong place or with the wrong motives, The Holy Spirit will nudge us. The Holy Spirit will gently reposition our thinking and introduce us to a deep richness and abundance of God's desires that we then start to express. The Holy Spirit inspires holy desires and ignites life-giving ideas and energy. Individuals today are going to come forward who have made a commitment to show up and to declare how they desire to live into and give expression to the Holy Spirit presence in their lives. The only bad news in all of this is that none of us can claim to be inept. We cannot claim to be helpless or overwhelmed. And know this, there is no power greater in all of creation than the Holy Spirit of the Almighty. There at the foundation of the world, renting light from darkness, there shaking Mount Sinai as the law thundered forth, there in the tomb, pulling life from the throat of death, there beside our desk, in our kitchen, in our prayer closet, wooing, watering, weeding, fertilizing, pruning, singing over us as we lift our beautiful head and spread our mighty arms and open our powerful God-directed hands, arming us with a mighty, unstoppable prayer of devotion and action, expressing the desires of God's own heart to effect God's salvation, God's rescue of this weary, worn, lonely, fractured world. It's enough to make us breathless, isn't it? To fly on the wings of the Spirit of God. Surely it's enough to make us bold. Surely it's enough to make us faithful. Do we dare believe it? Let's stand and sing, O Spirit of the Living God.